The Sanctuary Service. Chapter 19. The Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor, and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day, wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and hallowed it. If a person who had not previously known of the existence of the Ten Commandments should suddenly come face to face with them, he would at once be struck with their reasonableness and good sense. As he read the commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," he would agree that it is a good commandment. So with the commandments, "Thou shalt not kill," and "Thou shalt not commit adultery," he would doubtless observe that most nations had similar laws and had found them necessary and good. He would be unable to find any fault with the law of God. One thing, however, might be puzzling to him. Why should the seventh day be considered holy? He would be able to see a reason for each of the other commandments. He would even be able to see the need for periodic rest, but the definite seventh day would seem arbitrary. From a mere health viewpoint, every fifth or sixth day, or eighth, or tenth day, would serve as well. And anyway, why select the seventh day of the week rather than just 1/7 part of the time? The other commandments conform to man's reason, but the seventh day Sabbath appears to be an arbitrary decree. He would argue that the spirit of the commandment would be fulfilled by the observance of an occasional day, as convenience might dictate. To demand that a particular day be observed is foreign to God's general procedure in regard to human liberty. The writer once had a conversation with a person in which the arguments here set forth were advanced. The person in question was well educated. The conversation turned upon the law of God, especially the Sabbath commandment. His argument ran somewhat as follows. "I appreciate the contribution your denomination is making toward law and order. In an age such as this, in which crime and lawlessness prevail, we must depend on the churches to stand stiffly for righteousness. I am sorry to note that some of the churches are not doing this. They are making light of the law of God, and this can but react in civil affairs. If God's law can be ignored with impunity, it is easy to take a like attitude towards civil law. I am glad, therefore, that you are preaching the law as well as the gospel. Both are needed. There is one thing, however, in which I believe you are mistaken. You are keeping the seventh day, and you believe that God requires you to do this. Though I honor your belief and think you are honest, I also think you are mistaken. I have given some study to the question, and I believe God's will and intent could be served just as well by your keeping the first day of the week as by your keeping the last. And it would be a great deal easier for you, and your influence would be enhanced. While I personally believe that it is immaterial whether I keep one day or another, or no day at all, I honor those who do. But I think you are mistaken in believing that you must keep the seventh day. God does not require it of you. The most he could expect would be for you to keep one day in seven. The Sabbath commandment is of a different nature from the other commandments. If a group of men who had never heard of the Ten Commandments were to live together, they would soon evolve a series of laws for their own guidance. Heathen nations and savage tribes have rules against stealing, killing, and adultery. I believe that such primitive peoples would after a while construct a code of laws in conformity with the Ten Commandments, but I do not see how they could ever evolve a seventh-day Sabbath law. There is nothing in nature that could guide them in such an undertaking. I consider the other commandments binding, but not the seventh-day Sabbath. To this, answer was given along the following line. Without admitting the truth of all your contentions, let us grant that the Sabbath commandment is in some respects different from the other commandments, and that man unaided by revelation could never arrive at a belief in the seventh-day Sabbath. That the Sabbath commandment occupies a unique place in the law of God is, I believe, conceded by most students. It is the one commandment that deals with time and has the distinction of declaring certain things sin if done at a stated time, in that it is different from the other commandments. It was this commandment which God selected in olden times to be the test commandment. Before the law was publicly proclaimed at Sinai, Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For you have brought us forth into this wilderness, to kill this whole assembly with hunger." The situation was critical. Something had to be done. Then said the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them, whether they will walk in my law or no. The gathering and the preparation of the bread which the Lord sent from heaven constituted the test for Israel to prove them, whether they will walk in my law or no. Every day they were to gather enough for the day's need, but on the sixth day they were to gather twice as much, so as to have enough to last them over the Sabbath. While the manna ordinarily would not keep fresh more than one day, on the sixth day God miraculously preserved the manna from corruption. So on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread. And he said unto them, This is that which the Lord hath said, Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord, bake that which you will bake today, and seethe that you will seethe. And that which remains over lay up for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade. And it did not stink, either was there any worm therein. And Moses said, Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today you shall not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. Some of the people were not satisfied, however. They went out on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long refuse you to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide you every man in his place, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. Of all the commandments God chose the fourth as the test commandment. When he wanted to prove them, whether they will walk in my law or no, he told them to gather manna each day sufficient for their need, twice as much on the sixth day, and none on the seventh. That was the test. When they disobeyed, it was not merely the Sabbath they broke, it was the whole law. God did not say how long refuse you to keep my Sabbath, but how long refuse you to keep my commandments and my laws. It was more than the question of a day. When they refused to observe the Sabbath, they broke the whole law. The Sabbath was the test, a sign of obedience. If they kept the Sabbath, they were reckoned as obedient. If they broke it, they were guilty of the whole law. It is to this and to later experiences that Ezekiel has reference when he quotes God as saying in the wilderness, I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctify them. The statement is here made that God's Sabbaths are a sign of sanctification. In the Lord's Sabbaths are called a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. In the first verse quoted the Sabbaths are called a sign of sanctification. In the second, a sign that I am the Lord thy God. In both, they are called signs. It is interesting to note the conditions under which these statements were made. The elders of Israel had come to inquire of the Lord, but the Lord declared emphatically that he would not be inquired of by them. He had spoken to them many times, and they had not hearkened. Why should he communicate further with them when they refused to do what he commanded them? They were like their fathers. The fathers had been disobedient, and had not showed any inclination to hearken. When Ezekiel thought to plead for them, the Lord commanded him to tell the people plainly wherein they had failed. Cause them to know the abominations of their fathers, the Lord says. This Ezekiel did by recounting to them the difficulty the Lord had in bringing Israel out of Egypt into the promised land, and in getting them to keep his commandments, especially the fourth. While they were still in Egypt, God had commanded them to cast aside all idols. This they had not done. Nevertheless, God brought them out of Egypt into the wilderness and proclaimed to them his law. In that law he points out the Sabbath, saying that it is his sign of sanctification and that he wants them to keep it holy. But the house of Israel rebelled. My Sabbaths they greatly polluted. Then I said, I will pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them. God, however, decides not to consume them. On the other hand, he feels that he cannot bring them into the land which I had given them, because they polluted my Sabbaths. God pleads with them, Walk ye not in the statutes of your fathers, either observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am the Lord your God. Walk in my statutes, and keep my judgments, and do them, and hallow my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. But the children rebelled, they polluted my Sabbaths. Then I said, I would pour out my fury upon them, to accomplish my anger against them in the wilderness. God decides that he will scatter them among the heathen and disperse them through the countries, because they had not executed my judgments, but had despised my statutes, and had polluted my Sabbaths, and their eyes were after their father's idols. Twice the statement is made that the children of Israel rebelled, they polluted my Sabbaths. God at last decided to purge out from among you the rebels, and them that transgress against me, and they shall not enter into the land of Israel. No one can reverently read this chapter without coming to the conclusion that God makes much of the Sabbath, that it is a test, a sign, that is selected above the other commandments as a proof of obedience. I will prove them, God says, whether they will walk in my law or no. The keeping of the Sabbath is a proof of obedience. It is the sign of sanctification. It is the sign that I am the Lord thy God. Just why did God select the Sabbath commandment as a test rather than one of the other commandments? Admitting the contention that the seventh-day Sabbath rests upon a thus said the Lord only, by this very fact special prominence and significance is given to it. One commandment is singled out from the rest, to stand as a test, a sign that if a person obeys that, he is in harmony with the whole law. It is as if God should reason thus concerning the other nine commandments. I have given them my law. I have written it upon their hearts. It is traced in every fiber of their being. They know by nature what is right and what is not. Their own conscience witnesses to the truthfulness of my law. The law is so plain, it is so evident to all that these basic commandments are necessary to existence that men might fail to accept them as of divine origin. Some will contend that the commandments are so vital to life and existence, so evidently necessary, that, unaided by any divine direction, the people would of themselves be able to make a law comparable to mine. They will boast that through the passing of the ages men have through experience arrived at the conclusion that it is not good to steal or lie or kill, and have evolved appropriate laws concerning such matters, and that these laws are not of divine origin, but are the result of human experiment, and are definitely ingrained in the race. They will point with assurance to tribes and races who for centuries have been out of touch with civilization, and yet have rules covering many points in the law. They will claim this as proof that the law is not of divine origin, that men are simply following a law which their own experience teaches them is for the good of mankind. God continues, I will make one provision in my law that does not have any correspondence in nature, that will be a positive command, and for which they will be unable to find any reason aside from my word. For the other commandments man can see a reason. They appeal to his good sense. But for this commandment there will be no other reason than my command. If they obey it, they obey me. If they reject it, they reject me. I will make that commandment a test, a sign. I will make it a test of whether they will keep my law, or no. I will make it a sign that I am the Lord. I will make the seventh day to be the Sabbath, and ask them to observe it. There is nothing in nature to indicate that this day is the Sabbath. If they keep it, it will be because I command it. I will make it a test, and tell them so. Thus I can prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. The Sabbath will be my sign, my test of obedience. The seventh day, not one day in seven. Whoever keeps it obeys me. Whoever rejects it rejects not only the Sabbath but the whole law. More than that, when they reject the seventh day, they reject me. The keeping of the seventh-day Sabbath is the sign that they accept me as their God. In course of time there will arise men who will claim to be religious, but who in reality are leaning to their own understanding. Many of them will reject the story and the God of creation, substituting their own theories on how things came into existence. Although they were not present when I spoke things into existence, they will pronounce learnedly of how it was done, rejecting my testimony as to the event. Some of them will definitely reject me. Others will claim to believe in me, and yet when it comes to a conflict between my word and their findings, they will reject me and accept their own theories. Rejecting the story of creation, they will naturally reject the memorial of creation, the Sabbath. They will not accept that which they cannot reason out. Their own mind is their final source of authority. I will give them a test which will show whether they will really walk in my law or no. If they accept my sign, my test, my Sabbath, they acknowledge in that acceptance a mind higher than their own. If they reject my Sabbath, they reject me, my word, my law. I will make the Sabbath a test. Men Y11 understand the challenge. They will not be able to evade the issue. They will clearly see that in the acceptance of the Sabbath they must and do accept my word by faith, rather than by their own reasoning. The keeping of the Sabbath rests upon faith only. Men cannot reason it out upon the basis of human experience or research. If they accept the Sabbath at all, they accept it because of their faith in me. The evil one will make every effort to destroy the faith of my people. He will attempt to counterfeit my work. He will advocate a spurious day of rest, and make it more convenient and popular than the day I chose at creation. And he will succeed with a large number of people, who will accept him in preference to me. He will challenge my day of rest and rally the people under his banner. The people will have a clear-cut issue before them. It will be a question of my Sabbath on the one hand, and the spurious Sabbath of my adversary on the other hand. I have my sign. He has his. It will be for everyone to choose under which banner he will stand. Knowing the end from the beginning, I have deliberately chosen the Sabbath as the test, to prove whether men will walk in my law or no. This is why I have placed it in the bosom of the law. It stands absolutely alone and rests entirely upon my word. I have made it the test commandment. It is my sign. It is not, of course, our contention that God passed through such a process of thought as is here suggested. He knows the end from the beginning, and acts accordingly. For good and sufficient reasons he gave the Sabbath as a sign, a test. We believe we can see some reasons for this. It behooves us to place ourselves wholeheartedly on God's side in this important matter. The Sabbath commandment has a vital bearing on the atonement. It was with reference to the transgression of the law that the blood was ministered in the sanctuary service. It was when one had done somewhat against any of the commandments of the Lord that he needed atonement. Does the transgression of the Sabbath commandment constitute somewhat against one of the commandments? Contains a lesson in point. The Lord, speaking to Israel, says, If you have erred, and not observed all these commandments, which the Lord hath spoken unto Moses, it shall be forgiven all the congregation of the children of Israel, and the stranger that sojourns among them, seeing all the people were in ignorance. Any sin which Israel or the stranger might do ignorantly could be forgiven. You shall have one law for him that sins through ignorance, both for him that is born among the children of Israel, and for the stranger that sojourns among them. Verse 29. But if a man sinned willfully, he was treated differently. The soul that does aught presumptuously, whether he be born in the land or a stranger, the same reproaches the Lord, and that soul shall be cut off from among his people. Because he hath despised the word of the Lord, and hath broken his commandment, that soul shall utterly be cut off, his iniquity shall be upon him. An illustration follows as to what is meant by sinning presumptuously. A man was found gathering sticks on the Sabbath day. The leaders were uncertain what should be done, and so they put him in ward, because it was not declared what should be done to him. The Lord did not long keep them in suspense. The Lord said unto Moses, The man shall be surely put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And all the congregation brought him without the camp, and stoned him with stones, and he died, as the Lord commanded Moses. God had proclaimed to Israel his commandments. He had told them to remember the Sabbath day. He had announced that it was his test whether they would walk in his law or no. There was no excuse. When the man went out gathering sticks on the Sabbath, he was not in ignorance. He was rebellious. He despised the word of the Lord. He broke the commandments. There was but one law for him. He had sinned presumptuously. It is one thing for men on earth lightly to think to change the day of the Sabbath. It is another thing for them to touch the eternal law of God, which is the foundation of his throne in heaven above. The commandments constitute the reason and ground of the atonement. A copy of this law was kept in the sacred ark in the most holy place in the sanctuary on earth, a place which none but the high priest could ever enter. Its sacredness was such that when on a certain occasion a man touched the ark, he was immediately smitten. What would have happened had he put his hand into the ark and attempted to change God's writing on the tables? Yet men impiously consider such a possibility. They forget God's holiness and the sacredness of the law, not to mention the impossibility of changing what is engraved in stone by God's own finger. Has the law, which is the ground of the atonement, and which necessitated the death of the Lord, been changed? If the Sabbath commandment has been changed, have others also been changed? If the law has been changed, has the ground for the atonement also been changed? And if so, did Christ die for one thing in the Old Testament and for another in the New? Did God demand the death penalty for willful transgression of the Sabbath commandment the day before Christ died on the cross, and not the day after? Or was there a neutral zone as to the death penalty? There may be differences among Christians as to many things. Can there be any difference of opinion as to the need and ground of atonement? Is Christ still our high priest? Is the law still beneath the mercy seat in the ark? Take away the law, and there is no longer any need of atonement. Contrariwise, if there is still atonement, there is still law. Without the law, the atonement becomes a farce, Christ's incarnation a pious fable, his death a miscarriage of justice, Gethsemane a tragedy. If the law or any of the commandments can be transgressed with impunity, if the law has been abrogated or its precepts changed, if the law as given by God himself has ceased to be the standard in the judgment, then Christ's death becomes unnecessary. The Father himself ceases to be the embodiment of justice and kindness, and Christ cannot escape the charge of being party to a deception. Let all Christians cry out against such doctrine. If the law is destroyed, the atonement is not needed, nor is Christ. Let the facts ever remain clear in all minds. Christ lived, suffered, died, and rose for us. We had sinned, transgressed the law, and were doomed to death. Christ saved us, not by doing away with law, for then he would not have needed to die, but by dying for us, thereby forever establishing the claims of the law. He now ministers his precious blood for us in the sanctuary above. He is our advocate, our surety, our high priest. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. By grace we are saved.